guys, I just got letters from the administration. It's going to approve everything. Remember how we sent out for both Die Hard and Home Alone? Yeah, I just got the notes. I'm gonna look at them right now. Says we can't afford Home Alone. Ah, but that's all right. That's all right. We still got Die Hard. It says that we don't have the approval rating for Die Hard. What does it even mean? I don't know. Wait, I got it. Violent Night. The story of Santa Claus, a slight against Mark Wahlberg, and a realistic depiction of what would happen in Home Alone. All rolled into one movie.
Four brothers ride into battle.
Man, we're nerds.
Gluten-free gladiator Andrew.
Sweet Caroline.
Todd the Brain Willard.
What you doing?
Dave the family man Shook.
Crash and burn.
Preston, call sign Apollo, piloting the light mech commando.
Atomic power.
I feel like we've grown as a podcast.
It's a science experiment.
So bad, it's good.
I thought you were ranting and I zoned out. My bad.
The most professional podcast on the internet.
Keep doing whatever makes you a discerning geek.
The Discerning Geeks Portal.
Yes, fans, it's the Discerning Geeks Portal. It's Christmas time, and we just don't have the money to do your Christmas classics. So we're going with a modern Christmas classic, Violent Night. The sensitive story of America's TV dad, David Huber, dressing up as Santa and murdering people violently. I'm your host, Preston. Along with me are family man Dave.
Have a good evening.
And the man that's drugged through these movies more often than not, Mr. Todd Willard. I hope he's going to have a great time today.
Yeah, I think I will. Yeah, this one's okay.
All right. To begin with, Todd, do you have a rundown for us?
Yes, I do. Okay, so tonight we are reviewing Violent Night. When young Trudy Lightstone spends Christmas Eve with her estranged parents and very wealthy extended family, the night does not go peacefully as hoped. Finding himself in the Lightstone mansion at the worst possible time, a tired and jaded Santa Claus must protect Trudy and at least the nice members of her family from thieves wanting money in the family vault. Motivated by Trudy's faith, goodness, and enthusiasm, the struggle of Santa Claus versus the thieves leads to a very violent night. Violent Night is starring David Harbour as Santa Claus, Alex Hassell, Alexis Lauder, and Leia Bradley as Jason, Linda, and Trudy Lightstone, Beverly D'Angelo as Gertrude, the Lightstone family matriarch, John Leguizamo as Scrooge, the bad guy leader. Too many actors to mention as the other bad guys with code names: Jingle, Peppermint, Sugar Plum, Krampus, Candy Cane, Frosty, Tinsel, and Gingerbread. And also starring Mike Dopehood as Commander Thorpe. And just to go through that cast list a little bit, David Harbour is, of course, well known for playing Police Chief Jim Harper in all four seasons of Stranger Things, the show whose fifth season might have to be renamed Stranger Things: The College Years, because even the youngest cast members are now 19 years old. You may have also noticed Beverly D'Angelo's name. She is also famous for starring as Ellen Griswold in the National Lampoon's films, including National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And I have a feeling that that bit of casting is intentional.
Of course.
And then Mike Dopehood is a Canadian actor, stuntman, and former football player who's been a guest or recurring player in countless TV shows. If it's produced in Canada, and especially if it's sci-fi, fantasy, or superhero, you can almost bet he's been in at least one episode. I even remember spotting he and his wife in the home improvement / real estate show Love It or List It Vancouver edition in 2013, back when I used to watch HGTV. I'm most familiar with him for playing recurring character Varro in 15 episodes of Stargate Universe. Violent Night was released on December 2nd, 2022, with a rating of R. It was written by Pat Casey and Josh Miller. It was directed by Tommy Wirkola. And where can you find it? It's currently on Amazon Prime.
Where it belongs. Yes, fans, this is a great time at the movies. I know most of the time we tend to go for the highbrow. We tend to go for the blockbuster cinema. But tonight, we are at the drive-in, because this is a drive-in movie, if there ever was one. Also, fun fact about a lot of the cast. Most of these people have starred in some of your favorite Hallmark movies. I believe the female henchman was the lead in a few of the Hallmark movies, the Christmas movies that they crank out every so often. And I want to say there are even more. I will now turn to our intrepid robot hostess to see if I am correct or if she berates me.
Oh, you're going to make me work right up until my Christmas PTO kicks in, aren't you? Fine. Stephanie Sy, who played Sugar Plum in Violent Night, had supporting roles in the Hallmark movies, The Santa Summit, and A Christmas Cookie Catastrophe. Mike Dopud, who played Commander Thorpe in Violent Night, had supporting roles in the Lifetime movie, Every Day is Christmas, and the Hallmark movies, Carrot Cake Murder, A Hannah Swenson Mystery, Check In It Twice, Christmas at the Golden Dragon, A Very Merry Bridesmaid, A Christmas Duet, and All Things Valentine. On a side note, Alex Hassel, who plays Jason, was in 10 episodes of Cowboy Bebop and 3 episodes of The Boys. Also, several of the actors and actresses in the heist crew have extensive credits as stunt people. I'm going to go back to day drinking now.
And welcome back. Great. Now, fellas, first impressions. How do you feel?
Well, I wasn't sure about this movie going into it. As you may know, I'm not much into horror. This isn't horror, but I'm also not always into, you know, dark movies. And this is one where I kind of knew just from the photos, maybe watching a preview for it a long time ago, I kind of knew at least vaguely what it was about. And I was like, I don't know if this is my kind of movie. And in some ways it's not, but for what it is well done. And I think I did end up liking it a little bit better than I might have expected.
Well, great. So more often than not, over this past year, Todd has not enjoyed the movie that we are reviewing.
So yeah,
this is a real Christmas miracle for us
here
on the podcast. Dave, what are your thoughts?
So, strangely enough, I'm actually right there with Todd. I was not really looking forward to this. I'm not a fan of the cheesy, violent movies just for the sake of being cheesy, violent movies. And you know, I was like, oh, this is just going to be one of those. But I got to say, it had a little bit of heart and soul to it. And that made a difference for me. I mean, there's still a lot of in there that I wasn't too keen on. But it did. It had its own little bit of heart, and it's definitely fell in that Christmas category of kind of trying to still have that Christmas miracle and Christmas goodness in it, even though there's a whole lot of cracking people's heads open with sledgehammers and things of that nature. So, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, great, great. I'm glad we all seem to be on board here for this sleigh ride of violence and sentimentality all rolled into a comfy cinnamon roll. Of course, we have to address the elephant in the room here. What is this movie if not a direct takeoff on Die Hard and Home Alone? In that regard, do you think they succeeded and added something to it? Or was it just, oh, we have to cram this in here just to get it in there?
I think that was done pretty well. I mean, they actually make some direct references to Home Alone. And there's a whole sequence in there where they do Home Alone type stuff. But it's intentional. It's not like they're even trying to hide it, because they've made references to Home Alone previous to that. And I'm trying to find it now. I do vaguely remember I put somewhere in my notes that it is also an homage to Die Hard.
Yes.
But for some reason off the top of my head, I can't remember how or why. So come back to me on that.
I mean, the general premise of the heist at Christmas, I believe even the security guard that monitors the front gate for the compound is named Al after Carl Winslow and Die Hard, yes.
Right. And I found it in my notes. The part that is kind of a callback to Die Hard is the fact that that Trudy and Santa Claus communicate over walkie-talkie. And that's what John and Al do some in Die Hard.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole lot because, yeah, you had that, you know, it's the same plot. You have the people breaking in to steal the money. And of course, they're waiting on the security people to come and save the day.
Spoilers.
And then the security people show up and oop, they've been bought out. And, you know, that was all. Well, that I think was Die Hard 2. But I mean, it's still the same. You know, it's like, oh, these guys are supposed to be here to help, but they're not. Whoa. So, yeah, there was a lot of those little references that were pretty cool.
But
and I'm torn here, right? Because, I mean, I enjoyed some of the references. I have to say, especially with the Home Alone references, like I could handle Home Alone. I had a really hard time handling some of the extreme we went to with some of the Home Alone gags. It was a little cringeworthy that I kind of had to muster my way through. And I understand the type of movie, and I understand that there are people who enjoy it and that kind of thing. I definitely can do without, you know, seeing the guy get a nail through his chin or, yeah, hearing the squishy sounds as he rips his back off from the nails in his backside and that kind of thing. It hurts me and makes me queasy and makes me enjoy the movie less. So while I understand that it's there and that's the type of movie that they were going after, it makes me not want to watch it as much. So I kind of like you had mentioned in the big intro, you know, some of this is more realistic. It's like, this is really what happens when you deal with nails and stairs and people, you know, falling and you know, getting glued to things and ripping the, you know, their scalp off and things like that. And it's like, you know, it's not going to be the cute, funny stuff that you see in a Home Alone. It's actually, this is the real, but in a way it was so violent. It was, and kind of gross. I was kind of like, oh, it was hard for me to continue to watch. But overall, like I said, the references were cute. And overall, I enjoyed the heartfelt sentiment of what was going on. So,
yeah, I kind of
nice. So, yeah, it might have been a little too violent. Oh, I'm sorry, Todd. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say I kind of have mixed feelings about some of that stuff because 2 years ago when we reviewed Home Alone, we talked a little bit about how MythBusters and other shows and YouTube channels like that would kind of debunk things in Home Alone where some things either wouldn't work at all or would work so well they would actually be lethal. Like the paint cans in Home Alone, those would smash somebody's skull. So it was kind of good in this movie to say, hey, this stuff can be lethal. And for one guy, it actually was. At the same time, I'm kind of like you, Dave. I don't need to see all that. And some of it was played a little bit too much for comedy, like when the guy does get either the nail or the screw through his chin. Well, if he would just lift himself up, which granted, maybe he had a hard time doing that if the ladder rungs were all cut. But otherwise, if he had just lifted himself up, he could have been off of that. But of course, the camera has to kind of freeze on him, kind of struggling with this thing through his chin for a while. And of course, he has to, you know, land on more nails and more screws. And of course, you kind of have to wonder, okay, how much time did this kid have to set all this stuff up? And then you've got upstairs in the attic, the things with the bowling balls. And that is a little less lethal. But at the same time, you also have to wonder, who in the family is playing that much bowling that they have a whole bunch of bowling balls? Who has bowling balls in their attic? And the great big thing that she was using in a slingshot, what is that? And where did that come from? And why would they have it? So, I know it's one of those things you're not supposed to think too much about. So, yeah, I kind of had mixed feelings about it because I like the fact that it was an homage to Home Alone, but because the type of movie it was, they were like, hey, some of this stuff is going to be lethal and we're not going to shy away from that. And yes, it was kind of funny. I can't help but wonder, okay, could they dial it back a little bit? But like I said, I'm not sure this is the right movie for that. So yeah, I kind of have mixed feelings about that sequence.
Well, all right. We're mixed overall so far. I feel like that's the best that this movie can realistically hope for. But we're still in the overarching positives. Now, to discuss the big twist on the festivities this evening, what did we all think about Santa Claus as a Viking warlord? Because I loved it.
I thought that was interesting. I wasn't sure if it was Viking or Celtic or I didn't get the nationality or ethnicity down, but I could tell that, yeah, he was definitely an ancient warrior. I assume that's where the tattoos came from. In fact, I meant to look it up to see if those are David Harbour's actual tattoos. I kind of doubt it because I think he's had his shirt off in Stranger Things some, but there again, they could have used makeup to hide him if those really are his tattoos. But yeah, I could tell that there was something going on with those tattoos. And then when we got the backstory, it's another one of those mixed feelings type thing. It's kind of like, in a way, it kind of sucks that Santa Claus has this really dark past. But at the same time, if you're going to put him in a movie like this where he needs to be equipped to do those kind of things, well, then giving him that kind of backstory helps it make sense. He's basically just reminiscing about old times. I would say mixed feelings again, but a little bit more on the positive, because it was a nice surprise that they did go to that much trouble to actually say, yeah, there's something to this.
I just went with the Viking because he was all about the hammer.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Vikings are more notoriously known for the hammer than anything else. Dave, what were your feelings about our troubled, dark, brooding Santa?
So, again, I'm kind of like Todd. I'm a little mixed, but actually I'm mixed on a little bit different level. I actually appreciated the Viking backstory. My mixed is I kind of wanted a little bit more. Like, I kind of wanted a little bit of that transition from how did we get from Viking to Santa? And that's what I was missing. I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. And it did, it kind of gave a little bit of the reason why he would be okay, you know, able to do what he did. But I kind of was wanting more. I was like, okay, they didn't explain really how he came from one to the other. And we just know that he was that. And so that was what was missing for me. And I think that would have helped even drive the story a little bit further for me.
So what you were really looking for is the redemption arc from Viking warlord to Santa Claus.
Or at least some explanation. You know, that's a hard leap to go, oh, you know, here I am. I used to fight and I was great with this hammer and that kind of thing. And we didn't really get any reasoning as to why or how he became Santa. And that was kind of missing for me because I kind of wanted a little bit, even if it was almost like a line or two or just a scene or two. I mean, 30 seconds or something to kind of see that transition. I would have felt a little bit better. But I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was kind of cool because I think there is a way to get from one to the other. And there's a reason why he could have that extra skill set, which kind of, I don't know, it's not totally tied to it. But I say that saying I wanted more. I will say also that I love the fact that they didn't give us more in some other areas. A lot of times he's talking about the Christmas magic and he goes, yeah, I still don't know how that works.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that. I was like, that is the explanation. It's how does the bag work? I don't know. I've never figured this out. And, you know, well, how does this happen? It's like, I'm still not figured out why or how all this Christmas magic works. It just does. And in a way, I was okay with that. That was all the explanation that I needed. So I'm a little bit two-sided on this because I wanted a little bit more explanation for his story, but I was okay with not having the Christmas magic and how it worked. I was okay with just saying, yeah, it just does.
Yeah, if you hadn't brought it up, I was going to bring up the whole magic thing, too, about how, yeah, he doesn't have it all figured out. And he mentions it several times. But like you, I kind of would like to have seen a scene of him being introduced to the magic, even if it's never explained to him, at least being introduced to it. And it kind of reminds me of another movie that I've watched. I don't know if you guys have watched it yet, and then we might review if there's enough time and if Andrew's able to join us one time. But the Santa Claus, and that's Claus with an E. And it's the one where Tim Allen stars a guy who Santa Claus ends up having an accident near his house. And so he has to put on the coat. And by doing so, he basically becomes Santa. And that's not a huge spoiler. That's basically what the entire movie's about. And so it kind of reminds me of that. It's like, did this guy find whoever Santa Claus was back then and take his jacket either by accident or on purpose and not realize he was getting into the Santa Claus with an E at the end? Or did he do something intentional, or was it a curse, or did somebody bestow upon him, or what did he train for it? Was it a redemption story back then? What's the deal? Also, there are references to there being a Mrs. Claus, and if Santa Claus himself is immortal, then she probably is too. So did he meet her along the way, or was she his wife way back then in like the 1100s, 1200s, whenever he was a Viking, and she went along with whatever magic he got? I do feel like maybe there's a little bit too much missing, and I would have liked those a little bit of that filled in too.
Well, indeed, there were a lot of plot holes here that were filled with more one-liner jokes then maybe either of you would have really wanted. But I think we get enough, like, we do get the arc for Santa is not only is he facing his own obsoleteism with the increasing digitization of children's toys and kids preferring video games and computers and all that to stuff that he would actually bring them. Yeah, and you also get, like, the small little kind of thing of he and Mrs. Claus are on the outs during this movie. And, you know, he's really got to find a way to get back in her good graces. And how is he going to do that? Well, like any good Viking, by smashing people in the head with a hammer. It's a great small little twist on what would be a traditional Christmas movie kind of plot line where the mom and dad have a small falling out, and then by the end of the movie, they've reconciled through the magic of Christmas and through just being together and being a family. But instead of all that, it's hammers to skulls. So let us move on to our next topic here. The villains. How do we feel about John Leguizamo as Scrooge and Beverly D'Angelo as the symbolism for capitalism in this movie?
I actually really did love the capitalism arc. I won't even say capitalism. I would say greed and how greed has kind of taken over and is very prominent. And it's all greed that leads to this event happening. And even a lot of the big plot twists, you know, hey, they get into the vault and surprise.
Money's gone.
Somebody's already stolen it before you got there.
Yeah.
I loved in the end a little bit of the redemption of him being willing the dad, Trudy's dad, was willing to, who was the one stealing the money, was willing to burn millions of it to keep Santa warm to try to save him. That's actually kind of a redeeming arc. I like a redeeming arc. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
I thought the bad guy was definitely believable, although he's definitely one of those that while they kind of gave a little bit of explanation for his backstory and why he was the way he was, it was pretty paper thin and not very convincing for like why he was as nuts and psycho as he was. But it was cool. I mean, at least they put one in there, you know. He's like, oh yeah, you know, this is what happened on this Christmas, and that's kind of why I'm okay with doing what he was doing, and then even trying to ultimately off Santa in the long run. Hey, he was a decent villain. Some of the others, I think, were a little more... I was trying to... What's the villains in Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Pasha and Boris.
Yeah, they kind of felt like that. You know, they're there to take the explosion and the whack in the head. And so that's why there were quite a few of them, I think, just because they were, I mean, there's just not any personality there. That's their point, is to kind of be goofy and dumb and then take a whack in the head and get blown up. The main premise and kind of those key points with fighting the greed and how it had over, you know, was one of the main things that Santa was struggling with at the beginning. You know, I'll give them this present, but they want 100 more. And you even see it when he was delivering some of the presents. You know, he's like, oh, here's my present. And then there's like 20 Amazon boxes there. And it's like, you know, whatever. He just kind of tosses it down. And so to have someone truly appreciate what he was doing and to go out of their way kind of gave a little bit of more meaning to him.
Nice. All right. Todd, what are your feelings on our villains?
Yeah, I agree with Dave some. In fact, one of the very first thing I put in my notes under the good stuff was I like the code names.
Yeah, they were fun.
Yeah, and when each of them got a code name and I could tell that some of them had accents, which means they were from different nationalities, I was kind of hoping for a little bit more. I was hoping each one would have a distinct personality, a distinct voice, maybe some kind of special skill or something. But like you were saying, Dave, they ended up being a little bit generic. They were basically just cannon fodder. And so they had the cool code names, but that was about the extent of it. So I was a little bit disappointed in that. I was hoping for a little bit more there. Plus, there were just a lot of them. So as far as the ringleader, Scrooge, whose real name is Jimmy, and then I forgot his last name, but he must have been a pretty good ringleader to get that many people on board for this, because that's a lot of people to convince to be in on a scam where they can't screw each other over and they've all got to be in on it together in order to get this money that is in the vault, which, yes, is several, I don't remember the exact amount, but I think it was like $100-something million. But when you really think about it, $100-something million spread out between that many people is not that much per person. I mean, it's definitely a good amount, but is it really enough that you want to go on like this murderous rampage and a scam that could easily go wrong and then have to divide it up with so many people for what might amount to, you know, just a few million? I don't know. There's got to be an easier way, even if you're a criminal. So I'm maybe a little bit skeptical about that. But at the same time, kind of impressed, because you were asking about John Leguizamo as the main guy. He was an effective villain. Because he did keep it together when everybody else was kind of starting to act a little bit silly and starting to kind of believe in Santa Claus. I mean, he kept it together. He was truly motivated by this theft. So yeah, he was effective in that way.
It's so great. We have an effective villain. We have a hero that we care about, and which leads us to the heart of the piece. Trudy, is she an effective Christmas child character? I default to Todd.
I definitely think so. She was definitely likable in every way. I like the fact that she is capable. We've already talked about the Home Alone scene, so I won't rehash it. But obviously, she was able to pull off quite a bit in that. So she's also very smart. So, yeah, she's definitely, I'm trying to think, what is the right word for it? Resourceful. That's what I was looking for. So, yeah, I definitely very much like her character. One little tiny thing. This is not even a nitpick, but more just a question. And this probably goes to Dave, because, Dave, you've got kids of your own, and I know that you used to work at a daycare. So I'm curious, was that kid older, like in real life, than what she was playing? Because she just seemed like she was playing a younger kid who might be something like 5, 6, 7 at the most, but she looked more like she was 8, 9, or 10. Did you get a sense of that too, or is she just maybe a tall kid for her age?
I always thought she was legit 12.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the synopsis. She's, and this I think is an area where they kind of dropped the ball, because to answer Todd's question first, and then I'll go back and kind of answer mine, Preston's question. But according to the synopsis, she's supposed to be 7. Okay. Did she act like a 7-year-old? No. I thought she was 11 or 12. Could she have pulled off the 11, 12-year-old? Yeah, I think. And her resourcefulness and things like that and all that was going on, I think I would have bought it as an 11, 12-year-old. More than likely, I would definitely say the actress was probably more than 7. I may have to try to Google that. That was not a 7-year-old. So to go back to answering Preston's question, you know, Trudy is what saves this movie for me. And I say that because and I've mentioned this countless times in our reviews. I have to have somebody that I'm rooting for in a movie or I just don't care. And none of the other characters did I care. Even Santa. I mean, even Santa, I'll be honest, had anybody else throughout any of the whole movie died, would not have cared. Could have movie could have ended and I would have been just as happy as I am, you know, with them alive. Trudy, I would have been upset. She was what held the movie for me. I was like, I am rooting for this girl. I want her to be successful. And by association, it made me root for the other characters. You know, I wanted Santa to be successful in fighting off the bad guys. I wanted her parents to be successful in building their relationship. I wanted the family to have a step forward and maybe becoming a better family. Only for Trudy's sake. The rest of them cared nothing about. So yes, she did a great job, in my opinion. I don't know that they ever mentioned her age in the movie. The fact that the synopsis says that she's 7, I'm kind of like, whoa, okay, that's way out of proportion. But it wouldn't have hurt. To me, it doesn't hurt the movie because I watched the whole thing thinking that she was like I said, about 11 years old, 12 years old. And I was happy with it. I would have rooted for her just as much at 11 as I would have 7. At 7, it would have been a little bit more weird to what some of the stuff that she was doing and the way she was acting. So, yeah.
Well, great. So we have an effective heart and soul for the movie. A classic Christmas child character on maybe not on par with Kevin McAllister, but close.
I made my family disappear. I took a shower washing every body part with actual soap, including all my major crevices, including in between my toes and in my belly button, which I never did before, but sort of enjoyed. I washed my hair with the Dove Formula shampoo. These cream rinse, but that just washed on. Is this toothbrush approved by the American Dental Association? Then I made myself go down there to do some laundry. And I found out it's not so bad. All this time I've been worrying about it. But if you turn on the lights, it's no big deal. You guys give up? Oh, yeah, thirsty. For more.
Trudy is really great. I think a lot of the scenes with her are great. The way she's able to kind of talk Santa through all of his problems, I think is a really fun like scene and use for her. And Santa caring about keeping her on the nice list, I felt, was a fun running gag.
It was nice to see, because as dark as Santa was going, there were times that you felt like he was trying to protect her from having to go that dark.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was important. It was a good way to do things, you know, even when she's, I forgot, they made a couple of references about something about shoving it up their butts or whatever. and it was like, oh.
Yeah, she was about to use the A word, and he was like, you know, let's try to keep it nice. And she was like, butthole? And he's like, well, that's borderline.
Yeah.
And she's like, anus is, and he's like, okay, that's anatomically correct. And then he's like, okay, let's try to stay focused. And, you know, he tries to move on from that part of the conversation. I thought some of the best parts in the movie were the conversation between Trudy and Santa over the walkie-talkie. I thought those were the things that, well, like you were saying, Dave, you didn't care about anybody in the movie, including Santa. And yeah, he's depicted as being very kind of jaded and kind of given up at the very beginning and just going through the motions. And so it's her that brings him around, and it kind of reminds him what his job is. And it's not like he's totally given up. And so you do see his good side come out the further it goes too. Another thing I highlighted in my notes was it's a really nice moment when they are over the walkie-talkie, and I think he's on the outside of the house, and I think he's trying to get away. But when she reaches him on the walkie-talkie and she says something about, you know, she needs his help or something like that, and it's such a great shot. He is looking through this window and is so perfectly centered to where her head is like right in the center of a window pane. And it's just, it's almost like a bullseye. And he's just like, she's a kid. My whole job is doing good things for kids. I've got to protect her, and it doesn't matter what else happens. And you can just tell. And he might be annoyed by it. He might wish he were somewhere else, but he also realizes this is my duty. I've got to do this. And it's just such a neat moment.
Right.
Yeah, it really is a nice emotional centerpiece for this picture that could have gone, you know, full-on splatter film. If they didn't give Trudy, like, the heart, the soul, the competence, and empathy. She has a lot of empathy for everyone in this movie. And that's kind of really interesting. She cares about Grandma, even though Grandma barely cares about her at all. She's trying to piece back together her mom and dad, which at the beginning of the movie seems like, you know, kid, maybe you should just cut your losses. But by the end, we're on square footing with the good stuff out of the way. Let's move on to the mediocre. How did we feel about the mom and dad?
You mean Trudy's mom and dad?
Yeah, Trudy's mom and dad, yeah.
Well, you may have already summed it up. Mediocre. They're okay. They're nice enough. I think they might have been a little bit underdeveloped. And I'm not sure I'm totally thrilled with their storyline about this whole night getting them back together, because who knows what issues they had before this. We don't know that backstory. It could be that they should get divorced. Who knows? And I'm not sure that a night full of violence is really the thing you want to use to get back together for. There again, there's only so much you can do in a movie, and especially one like this where you got to do all kinds of stunts and stuff like that. But still, I think that was one thing that I don't know if I totally bought them getting back together. And I'm also not sure I learned enough about them to totally like them, other than the fact that they were innocent and probably didn't deserve to die for any reason.
No. I don't think they deserve to die. I often use the term block of wood.
Yeah.
And the mom is definitely borderline block of wood. There are a lot of scenes where she delivers her lines and she has conviction and passion and whatever. But man, that scene, that introduction scene in the car, coinciding, you know, Christmas gift exchange with the rich mother that doesn't care about any of them, was brutal. And I imagine it was intended to be brutal. I feel like that was a choice. So with the mediocre out of the way, let's hit the bad stuff.
Well, let me add, because I will say, and this is where it's kind of tough, because you're like, okay, are you rooting for these guys to be back together or not? And you kind of, again, like I said, part of me was, just for Trudy's sake, actually kind of most amusing lines of the movie. So it comes out that,
spoilers,
you know, the dad has stolen the money, and he's like, yeah, I did it so that we could run off together and we would never have to be under my mom again. And it was like, so you're big plan to get back together with your wife to get out from under the money was to steal all the money?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, and you could tell that was kind of the dysfunction that was there. And so, yeah, I mean, again, it kind of sums them up, and parts of it were funny, but parts of it were, you know, well, how do I really feel about these people? Because they're not much better than some of the other stuff, you know, that's going on. So, but yeah, I'll let you move on.
Yeah. So I think it's time for it. I believe we're here at the bad. And I'll hand the baton off to the man that I know has a list of bad stuff and stuff that we all need to hear. Todd, what are your feelings about the bad parts of this movie?
Well, there really aren't too many bad things. I mean, the one bad thing is the thing we've already talked about, is that the older I get, I'm not into dark stuff, either horror or violent stuff. And this movie has the word violent in the title. So you go in knowing it's going to be a violent movie and you just kind of have to deal with it. And I wish it weren't that violent. But there again, the big fight scene in the barn was mostly dark. So even though it was violent, I could kind of tell what was going on. I kind of appreciated the fact that it was dark, so it wasn't overly graphic. That kind of toned things down a little bit. But anyway, I've really only got a few small complaints. I'll go ahead and say that the hostage killing scene was really stupid. That's the one where they thought the job was done, we're ready to kill the hostages. And that's the one where there's only one guy left holding everybody else hostage. And he's like, who should I kill first? And I'm like, oh my goodness, you've got a machine gun, just mow them down. It'll only take a second. So of course, that is a very cliche scene where he's got to do something to slow down to allow them to get out of it. How they keep saying, this person sucks, go ahead and kill them. And he's like, okay. And they're like, no, this person sucks more, kill them. And he's like, oh, I don't know who to shoot first. And I'm like, again, you have a machine gun, just hold down the trigger and move back and forth. You're going to hit them all in 2 or 3 seconds. So that was probably the worst scene in the movie just because of the cliches. I could actually handle all the violence in all the rest of the movie. It was the cliches that I hated more. So that would be my one big negative. I might be able to get one or two others in, but I'll let Dave take a turn.
Where to begin? I want to give a pass on some of just the slapstick grossness at the beginning. But I really can't, because I just felt like it was totally unnecessary. And I kind of got the point of where Santa was without any of it. And so by this, I mean, like, okay, so he starts off in a bar and he's getting drunk, and then he flies away, and the bartender's like, wait, he just went to the roof. Why did you go up there? And then she runs up there and he throws up all over from the sleigh. I was like, okay, I didn't need that. And then later.
I agree, and I take it back. That was the worst thing in the movie.
Yeah. Was his going up that late. And then a few scenes later, he's like flying and peeing off the side of the sleigh as he's flying through, I think it was London or somewhere, I don't know. And I was just like, I didn't need any of that. You know, I just didn't add to it. And I will piggyback on Todd's. I will say that the stupidity of the people with guns, yes, I understand that, you know, allows you to get to the part where you get to hit people with hammers and stuff versus, you know, just shooting people with guns. But there were multiple times when it was like, that's just stupid. I think, like, towards the beginning, the Grinch guy comes out of the vault, and she's standing there with security guards, all with guns pointed directly at him. And they're just going to sit there and have a conversation with him. I'm like, no, if they were any account, they would have just shot him down and moved on into the safe room. Oh, he came out of the safe room. That's right. And it's like, what are these people doing? And then there's 100 other times when it's like, oh yeah, I'm standing over here with a gun, but I'm going to just talk to you and do something stupid rather than shoot you with it so that we can get to whatever. You know, we have trained military people and snipers, and he can't hit the big fat red guy on the roof at 100 yards. It's like, oh, come on. I mean, he obviously, maybe that's why he's working, you know, and not actually in the military anymore, because they call him a sniper, but he can't even shoot straight. I mean, there's just tons and tons of those little things where it's kind of like, yeah, that's kind of dumb. I mean, you look past it because you know that's the point. You know, I think there was a scene where they all ducked behind a snowbank as they're just laying into the snowbank with machine guns. And I'm going, the snow is not going to stop the bullets. But anyways, that's just some of the nitpicky factual stuff that just didn't make any sense. And it was kind of dumb, but yeah, the grossness at the beginning was more of the stuff that I didn't need. I would say that the other family members, they went overboard in trying to make them like you want to kill them, especially the daughter's son, who was some kind of vlogger or something. I mean, you're really rooting for this poor kid to just get it. It's like, somebody, please, just so I don't have to put up with him in the movie anymore, just shoot a bullet through his head.
So the only one that I've read a trivia fact about was that the oldest sister's boyfriend is based around Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, yeah.
And his whole character is just because Mark Wahlberg used to go around telling people all the time that if he was on board one of the planes at 9/11, he could have single-handedly stopped the terrorists.
Well, that's not appropriate.
Didn't lose the grandeur.
Sounds so old. So different.
Sounds kind of bananas to me.
It sounds like a frat boy.
Gotta just keep this to yourself.
And so that whole character exists to take a shot at Mark Wahlberg and just kill him off with him not doing anything and crying and peeing his pants. That's the whole reason that character exists.
Okay.
It leads me to believe that other characters like that were designed to take shots at certain people. I want to say the vlogger kid looks kind of like some of these weird internet celebrities we have now, like an amalgamation of Ben Shapiro and Logan Paul thrown into a blender and then you get this kid. That sounds like the worst milkshake ever. But yeah, I really think a lot of the family were just caricatures of people the writers didn't really like. When things come around that are basically directly lifted from older existing stories, the question is there enough of a spin to justify its existence? I think there personally is enough of a spin here to justify its existence, but it's very, very thin. And, you know, as we've stated before, I think that Trudy is really the reason that this movie is any good at all. And the reason why the movie kind of doesn't fall into this, oh, this is just something off of fanfiction.net that a studio bought or something. That's me on the negative.
Well, let me piggyback on that, because I definitely feel like I'm getting old. We've kind of established that. Kind of wish Andrew was here, but that's okay. He would point out that I'm getting old.
Andrew would love this movie. Like,
oh yeah,
Andrew's review would be like, this is the best movie ever. Why have you hidden this movie from me?
Well, and I think that's why I will say that it definitely has its own niche. I mean, I could see a group of college guys, especially, or you know, they're kind of done with the, oh man, I'm not going to watch another sappy Christmas movie. I need something to just kind of take my mind off. We've already seen Die Hard. What else are we going to do? And yeah, somebody pops this in and they're going, oh, this is great, man. This is awesome. And it's entertaining and it still has that Christmas spirit and they feel like they can watch it at the holiday time. Now, I will definitely say that I feel like it'll be one of those that they'll outgrow at some point. they'll probably watch it for a couple of years in college, maybe even a year or so afterwards. They'll get into those post-college years and then they'll kind of like invite some people over and they'll sit back and go, oh, yeah, okay, I remember why I watched this, but yeah, it's a little much. And they won't watch it nearly as much. And they may go back to it at some point in their future. But, you know, for those teenagers and early, you know, 20 guys who are just looking for something to kill some time on a holiday break, hanging out with some buddies, I could see this being the thing that they would want to go to. They're going to watch this more than they are a Hallmark movie or the feel good movies that come out, the Scrooged and things like that. So
this is Hallmark movies for dudes.
Yeah. where it'll fail is this is going to be one of those that they're going to be like, oh yeah, you know, honey, I'll watch this Hallmark movie with you and then you can watch this movie with me. And they're going to be like, yeah, that did not work like I thought it would.
I mean, I know. Listen, I don't know if you've been subjected to too many of those Hallmark movies recently, but man, they're getting worse.
It's actually funny. We were talking about things. Apparently, spoilers for those who are listening to our podcast. I think we've mentioned it before. We're all from North Carolina. One of the big Hallmark movies actually comes out in about an hour on the Hallmark Channel is Christmas from the Biltmore, which is the Biltmore house here in North Carolina, the big Biltmore estate. And they have done a whole Hallmark movie based on the Biltmore. And this was a topic of conversation at my family's Thanksgiving. People were excited about it. Like,
okay, okay. This is where I get to get my soapbox out.
Welcome to The Vanderbilts Can Kiss My Grass. Now here's your host, Preston.
I've lived in Asheville. As a former resident of Asheville, I must inform you. The Biltmore House is very beautiful.
That's confirmed.
Everything's great about it. But if you get up on a Saturday morning and you ever say to yourself, God, I have wasted so much money on this lawn and now I have to mow it for the next 3 hours. You should look to Asheville and you should curse the Biltmores. Because that is the reason that you have a green lawn that you cannot maintain on your property because it is not native to North Carolina, but because the Biltmores were rich and Asheville gets a lot of rain, they can import this St. Augustine grass and plant it over that acreage.
The house is named Biltmore, but it was built and owned by the Vanderbilt family. So, whenever Preston says the Biltmores, he really means the Vanderbilts.
And then the reporters come by and take a picture of this gigantic green field that Biltmore could pay someone to mow away their entire life. And then everyone's like, yeah, I gotta have St. Augustine grass too because the Biltmores had it. And the Biltmores, no, because they're from Scotland. You know, England gets a lot of rain. That's the reason grass grows. Grass is very thirsty. Here in North Carolina, we've recently come out of a drought. I don't know about you, but the grass that I've been paying $75 a month to keep up has started to die. And every time this happens, because it happens a lot, I just think to myself, you damn Biltmores and your damn lawn. But no, the Biltmore House is amazing. It's beautiful. Go see it. Support Asheville tourism. Always keep Asheville weird.
It is a neat place, and I do enjoy it. It has gotten really expensive, though.
Oh, yeah, no, the rich people showed up. As soon as the beer took off, the rich people showed up.
Yeah.
And the old days, like when I was there, there was a entire building for single men, and you could just pay like $20, and you get like a room with a cot and a shower, and you could just crash there for the night if you didn't want to drive home because you were drunk or whatever. That's gone. I think that has become now some kind of like art gallery apartments for rich people, which is ridiculous to me.
No,
I'm down off the soapbox.
This has been The Vanderbilts Can Kiss My Grass with your host Preston. For more complaints about overly rich 19th century railroad tycoons having a negative effect on North Carolina horticulture and lawn care, tune in next time for another episode of The Vanderbilts Can Kiss My Grass. Guests of The Vanderbilts Can Kiss My Grass, do not stay on the grounds of the Biltmore Estate, because, holy shit. Go to Biltmore.com and check out what they're charging per night for some of their on-premises accommodations, especially during Christmas, and you'll say, holy shit, as well.
Anything else anybody wants to discuss about this movie? We are at the potpourri section of the evening. Do we have anything else?
Well, the main thing I'm concerned about is you've done a really great job of moderating this, but you've been asking us a lot of questions. Did you want to say anything more about the villains or Trudy as the hero or any bad stuff, good stuff, anything like that?
I feel like I've expressed my thoughts very thoroughly.
Okay.
I think I said everything about Trudy being the heart and soul of this movie, I absolutely agree with it. The villains, I think they're fun. Poor John Leguizamo is coming off of his starring role in the Super Mario Brothers movie, and he puts his whole foot into this, and he really tries, and I think he does well. I think I've said pretty much everything there is to say about Violent Night that I can think of at this current time.
Okay.
So, gentlemen, if you're ready and everyone has their dice, it's time for the lightning round.
Lift off and the clock has started.
Lightning round.
I got a 15.
Ooh.
I got a 1.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Epic fail.
I got an 11.
Ooh, okay. That means I get to start us off.
Yeah.
Okay. Dave, are you ready?
I think so. I don't know if I have a whole lot more to add, but yeah.
Okay. And go.
Yeah. If you're a college-age kid and looking for something, some time to kill over the holidays, I'm going to say turn into Violent Nights. You know, the rest of you, I will say stick with Die Hard and Home Alone because, yeah, you get a little bit more entertainment out of those. But yeah, it was fun. I appreciate the Preston's mentioning this one. I would have never watched it otherwise. So,
okay, Preston, you're next. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, and go.
Driving Academy Award nominations for David Huber for peeing on the White House, like all of us want to do at some point in time. And fans, if you just aren't in the mood for your Christmas holiday, stick this on the TV, let it run, and try to drain some of that cynicism out of your mind, because you're going to be around family and you're going to be around people that you love. And if this helps you get into the Christmas spirit, please do it.
Yeah, as far as getting the Christmas spirit, I'll say later how this ranks as far as whether it's a Christmas movie. Okay, but for lightning round, I'm up next. Ready and go. The very first punch in the movie looks really fake, even I noticed. I like Santa's holographic naughty or nice scroll. I like that the gunmen with their real names were on Santa's naughty list. As soon as I saw the outdoor fireplace, I could tell exactly what's going to happen next. The subplot about who actually stole the money is a little bit underdeveloped. I'm really disappointed that Mike Dopehood plays a character that literally shoots Santa Claus. And then as far as the naughty or nice scroll, Trudy Lightstone kept room clean, listened to parents, kind to animals, invited weird kid to party, and sweet care. And I was trying every time Santa would use his naughty or nice list, I would try to freeze on it and try to read the words. And I think that was one of those things that may have flashed by a little bit too quickly, because it actually gave details on some of the bad guys and everything. But when it came to Trudy, the first thing on there said kept room clean. But at first I misread that and I thought it said kept mom clean. And I thought, well, because it's such a graphically violent movie, maybe that's a serious statement about maybe her mom is an alcoholic or drug addict or a gambler or something like that. And Trudy was helped keep her mom clean. And then I like paused it again and realized, oh no, it says kept room clean. Okay.
Yes, room. I feel like the opiate addiction subplot would have been a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would have made Trudy even more impressive than she already was.
Oh yeah, no, no. That'd have been a pretty big deal though for the 7-year-old to keep mom off of the pills. All right. I believe that leads us to our grand ratings.
Ratings.
Dave, you won the dice roll?
Yep. I'll be honest, this was a tough one for me to rate. I try to keep my ratings pretty simple. One of the things that I just, number one, I always have to have is my enjoyability of watching the movie. how much did I enjoy it? And I usually rate that in the sense of, will I go back to it again? Which hurts this movie, because I'll be honest, I'm more than likely never going to watch it again. I was appreciative because I felt like there was more there than I would have ever thought, and I would not have realized that had we not reviewed it. So it does get a little knock up there. And I was genuinely impressed with the Christmas spirit and the Christmas sentiment and the heart that was actually in this movie, all the way down to the very last when the sleigh finally shows up and Mrs. Claus has sent his hammer, and and it was like, she was thinking, she knew what he needed. And that just kind of made you feel good inside. You know, there was this a little bit of a conclusion or a move forward, even in Santa's arc, that things were getting better with him and Mrs. Claus. And I appreciated that. I thought that was a great, just tiny little touch. That being said, I have to give it a number. I always rate from, you know, 0 to 1 to 10. You know, no surprise, this isn't going to get a high rating from me, but I'm not going to trash it either. So it gets a solid 6.5. There's some stuff there that's interesting to watch, and I would challenge those, especially young males who are just looking for something that means a little bit more than Betty Baker's cookie shops getting ready to close in some little tiny town on Christmas and she marries some millionaire.
What the hell are you talking about?
That's crazy, right?
It made no sense.
You know, there's more here than in some of those Hallmark movies.
Oh, now I get it.
Why didn't you say that?
I thought it was understood.
But that being said, there's other things that I would rather spend my time on, and there's some crudeness and things that I definitely avoid when I'm watching a movie, just because they hurt me. So yeah, 6.5 out of 10, not horrible, but obviously not a blockbuster either. So take it away, Preston.
All right, fans, this is where I get to be the one and only host at the drive-in. I have to steal one from one Mr. Joe Bob Briggs, who would always say that it's not about how great and intricate it is all the time. Sometimes it's just about being good old-fashioned fun. And in that spirit, and as I believe the man himself would rate it, this is 4 stars. Preston says, check it out.
Nice. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, that's a pretty high score. A couple years ago, when we reviewed Children of Men, the big Christmas movie.
Yes. The humanity is almost at extinction. So let us, you know, wage war over the last pregnant woman on Earth. The Christmas movie, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big debate in that movie review was, is that a Christmas movie or not? And I even came up with a way of, what's the right word? Enumerating? Numerizing?
Quantify.
Quantify, thank you. Of setting a number, a score, to how much a movie is a Christmas movie on a scale of 1 to 7, because there were certain elements that it need to have. And I said Children of Men was a 1 out of 7. So go back and listen to that review, because I've listened to it recently and I'm like, I am not a good debater. And I actually still feel exactly the same about all my points. There are even times where I'll listen to that review and I'll think, I really should have made this point. And then I'll listen a little bit longer. Oh, I did make that point. Oh, wow. I was really on point with that. But anyway, so on that same scale of 1 to 7, oddly enough, I give Violent Night a 5 out of 7. So this is a Christmas movie, a weird one, not one you want to show to your kids, but nevertheless, it is more a Christmas movie than things like Die Hard, Iron Man 3. You know, it's not just a movie that happens to be set at Christmas. It is definitely a Christmas movie. Obviously, I had some mixed feelings all throughout, but leaning toward the positive. So my letter grade is a B-. And it's weird. I went through a phase there for a while where like we're talking, you know, I was kind of the grump for a while. I was giving a lot of movies D-pluses and C-. It seemed like here lately, B- has been the common grade. But I give this a B-. And at the moment, it's ranked 59 out of 98 movies that we have reviewed or will review. But I think that might be a little bit high, and I didn't have time to go back and refine this a little bit. I think it might drop to at lowest 64th out of 98. So just a few spots, maybe. It's still kind of in the like that middle third.
It's better than Black Adam. That's a win for us.
It is better than Black Adam.
Yes, quite a bit. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Black Adam is 84th. So, yeah, quite a bit better.
All right. So, since I'm not very good at the outro, Dave, would you mind ever so terribly?
Oh, no, that's quite all right. I do want to thank you guys out there for listening. We do wish you a Merry Christmas. We hope that if you have millions of dollars just stored away in your home this holiday, that you find something productive to do it and somebody doesn't try to break in and kill you and steal it. That's a genuine Christmas sentiment that we have for you.
You hope listeners aren't robbed and murdered by thieves? That's like the absolute bare minimum of holiday wishes.
We also ask that you do us a huge Christmas favor. That is, as you're looking at our podcast, you hit the little stars. We like the one that has all five of them. That's the best. And we hope that you will rate us with our five stars or as high as possible, depending on your pod chaser of choice. And that way we can move up and get more reviews and likes and things of that nature. We would love to hear your feedback. What is the Christmas movie that we really should review? You can let us know by emailing us at discerninggeeks@gmail.com. You can also interact with us on Facebook, the Discerning Geeks Portal Podcast, or on X. I don't know why X, Twitter. But it's just Twitter. X. It's at Discerning Geeks. So, yeah, we appreciate all of you listening and your interactions with us. And we thank you for just being dedicated to this podcast and you're listening to us as we discuss these movies. And of course, through the holidays, we encourage you to just enjoy whatever makes you a discerning geek. Thank you so much for listening. Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure. Enjoyed watching the movie, but enjoyed discussing it with you even more. So Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and Happy New Year and Happy Thanksgiving and all of that wrapped up into one. So I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, Violent night, drunken night. Dave's passed out, Preston's high, Todd is watching Babylon 5.
Wait, hold on. Did we make it through a whole episode without a Babylon 5 reference?
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. I planned that out. I planned that. Yes.
Yeah, and I don't know if Mike Dupud was in Babylon 5 because I don't think it was in his IMDb, and that might have been before he was an actor.
Oh, man. So yeah. Close.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you, everyone, for listening, and happy holidays. And may the Force be with you.
Always.
For more Discerning Geeks Christmas episodes, check out number 26 Gremlins, number 28 Muppet Christmas Carol, numbers 34 to 36, Christmas themed Dungeons and Dragons one-shot radio play, parts 1 to 3, number 80 The Man That Invented Christmas, number 81 Klaus, number 82 Home Alone, number 83 Children of Men, number 115 Whatcha Do in December 2022 Catch Up, and number 149 National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Stay tuned for a review of The Santa Claus. That's Claus, with an E. Will the geeks also get a review of Batman Returns, recorded and edited in time for Christmas? And is Batman Returns even a Christmas movie to start with? Stay tuned to find out.